Hi, this is Robert Scheer with another edition of Scheer Intelligence, where the intelligence comes from my guest, and in this case, it's Christopher John Basso, professor of public policy and politics at Northeastern University, published by the University of California Press. Do you want to hold up the book for when we show it on video? Because one thing marvelous, it's a great book, very important book, but what's really great about it is it only costs $25 in hardcover. How did they do it? They ripped off Chinese labor, right? The great hypocrisy of it. Then they'll
It was subsidized by foundation money. So how they actually did it beyond that, I don't know.
But let's cut to the chase here. You've written about a subject that most people don't want to think about unless they happen to be in the 40 million American group of people who need the food stamp program, needs supplementary, what is it technically called?
The Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program.
Yeah, and the subtitle of the book is A Political History and Defense of the Food Stamp Program. Now, let me just tell you, as a kid, I was born in 1936, so thank God for FDR is what I heard all my life. And my father lost his job the day I was born in Bronx Hospital, and had it not been for all sorts of programs that came in response to the Great Depression, I would not be here. That's pretty clear. So I have never understood why any of this is controversial. And in the case of the food program that you're talking about, SNPR3, it's major advocates were basically agriculture, big low-paying stores like Walmart, right? The Sun Belt, and because basically we used to destroy food when we overproduce, because we have all these agricultural subsidies, so there'd be big collections of cheese rotting and grain rotting and everything. And the food supplement program was, hey, don't let it rot, give it out to people who need it. You know, it's a no-brainer, whatever religion you believe in, whatever philosophy, you got to be a kind of weird character to not want this. Now, once again, some Neanderthal Republicans, I don't want to give Neanderthals a bad rep, are attacking this program once again. I should point out that George W. Bush actually expanded the program. There used to be an enlightened Republican view and supported Walmart's position because, in a way, it underwrites low wages that people can get assistance. But you chose to write about the book, and I like the title. It's a political history. You're an academic. You're objective. But you put in there, and defense of the food stamp program. Why does it need defense?
Well, I think it's a great question. And I defend it because it's one of those programs that everybody doesn't like for different reasons. You know, liberals, for example, would prefer straight cash. You know, it's one of those programs that they would prefer that low income households get cash. A straight, like Nixon's universal income kind of idea way back when. Conservatives, depending on which brand of conservatives you talk to, don't like the idea of welfare, and they regard SNAP as welfare. It is actually a supplemental program designed to supplement food nutrition, but it's also at the end of the day an income supplement. That's what you're doing. So, and everybody has a critique of the program for different reasons. You know, your point, does SNAP subsidize Walmart and other low wage employers? You know, maybe it does, because by supplementing wages, does SNAP incentivize, does it disincentivize work? Well, there's critiques about that. There's arguments about that. Does it incentivize people eat bad food? There's critiques about that. Should we? And there's all kinds of critiques about SNAP.
What everybody should love about your book, so let's just cut to the chase.
Okay.
This is a book about a program that has worked for a long time, 70 years or something, right?
Yep. How long? It'll be 60 years next year, officially, it's 60 years now because Kennedy brought it back in 1961.
Okay. So let's just be clear. I'm urging people to buy and read a book. You want to show it again? Show me the cover again, because I like the whole idea. But why?
This is actually a 1980s era food stamp.
what we want to know, because everybody's saying we throw money at problems, we throw money at problems. Of course, they don't mind throwing problems at banks that defraud people out of their homes, as Obama did in the saving the banking industry because they were too big to fail. But nonetheless, the very idea that at this stage of technology and civilization and everything else, we are questioning whether you should have supplementary food aid to people, and they have children are involved, families and everything, is to my mind absurd, and that I should have to applaud you for setting the record straight and telling us that it works and why it works. And yet, the reason people should read this book is some in the Republican Party, possibly the new leader of their majority in the House. You know, I don't know where Trump actually personally comes down. He was actually a pretty big spender during the pandemic, throwing money at problems, you know, help people on unemployment and everything else. Maybe he won't be so bad. But nonetheless, your book was celebrated by the New Republic because they're big, and a lot of liberals, their big thing now is Trump is this menace who's going to destroy everything. And your book was celebrated as an achievement of an enlightened program that works that the Republicans might destroy. Let's put that to the side. That's prediction. What I would like to know is, first of all, if this program works, and it's a model, and right now, at this moment in America, probably it's we don't know the exact figure, but it's close to 40 million human beings are getting some food on their breakfast table, some eggs that would otherwise have been destroyed. This is part of helping agriculture be stable. That was one of the original goals of the thing. They're going to be able to feed their children before they go to school, so we don't have to totally depend upon the school lunch program, which also benefits from this. And so, to my mind, why isn't this why is there any controversy about this?
Well, I mean, it's controversy simply because this is the United States and we don't like welfare. That's sort of our history, our culture is an anti-welfare, at least that's the way it's, you know, talked about. I mean, at the end of the day, Americans actually like a lot of the programs that are in place. They just don't like welfare in its abstraction. And so SNAP gets caught up in this welfare debate, which got its fair share of, you know, racial and gender overtones to it. This notion that you should, you know, take care of yourself is deeply ingrained in our culture. Having said that, you know, we don't want people to go hungry. And that's the point why SNAP has survived so long, is that at the end of the day, it meets at that point in contradiction. We don't like welfare, but we don't want people to go hungry in a land with so much food. So SNAP becomes the sort of place where
we put the word welfare into that. It has nothing to do with the traditional use of the word welfare. Let's cut to the chase. I mean, the reason I am in such shock that this is a center of controversy is that most of my life, this has not been a controversial program. Agriculture likes it. Rural America likes it. Republicans often have liked it. Even cranky liberals like it. And it seems to me now, and you make a very important point, is that we want to build an us-them dichotomy. We want to have a group of people to dislike. This is the old welfare queen thing that Ronald Reagan did, which you discuss in your book. And we want to pick on not the poor, because there are plenty of white poor and they can also vote. And this is a program that, as I keep saying, has basically benefited agriculture, big or small, and has taken food that would have otherwise been wasted. And we've been reading stories, as we used to read, of cheese rotting and, you know, grain spoiling and everything else. So this is clearly a win-win program. Win-win. I didn't need your book to convince me that this was a program that works. What I find amazing is that this sensible use of government authority and so forth should be questioned, and questioned now, maybe in this election.
Right. I mean, it's not new in a sense. One reason why it raises the defense of it, because for the last 30 years, there really has been a wing of the Republican Party, the most conservative group, going back to Gingrich, that, you know, And, you know, even before that, that attacked SNAP as essentially welfare. So there has been a strain of anti-welfare.
Can I just interrupt you for a second? Sure. I actually interviewed Gingrich about this. Mm-hmm. And his phony baloney thing was really, it should come, we need charity and we need help and we have to help people. It should come from the private sector, from individual mm-hmm. Americans. Well, the fact is there are a lot of private church organizations and sure. so forth that can use this program to distribute food.
Well, I mean, let me be blunt. Without SNAP, the entire food pantry, food bank system breaks down, because SNAP is the huge elephant in the room, even for those folks. Because if you did not have SNAP, those folks would have nowhere to go a lot of times, and they would go to the food banks and the food pantries, and there wouldn't be enough there to support them. They all know that. So they all know that without, so the food bank system is a big supporter of SNAP, because they know without SNAP, without school meals, they would crumble under the demand.
So one other argument, okay, so we're going to stipulate here, and if people don't like it, they should research it and they can get angry about it. But as far as I'm just going to stipulate, and this is the prejudice of having grown up in America for a long time. And I full confession, I was born in 1936 at the height of the Depression. And so, yeah, my family got a lot of support from measures of the Roosevelt administration, okay. including food support. And so I suspect for my generation, even if they're arch Republicans, there wouldn't be that much argument about using surplus food to feed people instead of having rot. It's that simple. Why would you want the food mm-hmm. to rot? Because I would say at the heart of the program, the reason it always sailed through Congress originally, big agriculture wanted it. You know, this was a way of subsidizing the price of food, you know, keeping it stable. And instead of, you know, just letting it buy, putting it somewhere to rot, no, we gave it to people. So I think it's one of those truly no-brainer issues. But I applaud you for pointing out that despite it being an obviously great program, it's under attack. And the attack reminds me, and I know that your book is not about the whole area of what is called welfare, but basically, how do we deal with the poor? You mentioned Michael Harrington and others, you know, have brought our attention to poverty. It's one reason why President Kennedy did expand this program a bit, because, oh, we do have poor people. And thanks to Michael and others who wrote about it in the early 60s, oh, we have to pay attention. But the irony is, here we are. No country has ever been this rich. No country has ever been this abundant, you know. And yet, we can't take care of a significant portion of our population. And we question anything, including a program that works. And I do want to remind people, because, you know, as I say, I read about your book originally. It was a New Republic article, and they were talking about all this Stop Trump and the Trump people want to hurt this. The fact of the matter is, I thought, wait a minute, where are the Democrats on these kind of programs, you know? And the argument that you address, I just want to read one thing, because it's a question about having incentives to work. And the attack on this, and it's mentioned here at the end of the New Republic article, yes, they said, the odd thing you said, they quote you, Vaso said, is that there's no good evidence that SNAP disincentives work. Two decades of studies have shown that work requirements are effective at kicking recipients off the roll, but not at getting those recipients to acquire a job. Oh, well, of course, that was the whole story of Bill Clinton's Project Success. It failed in Arkansas when he put it in. It failed nationally. Oh, we're going to get these welfare. 70% of the people on what was called aid to families with dependent children were those dependent children. 70%. I covered this. I went to Arkansas. I looked at Governor Clinton's program, and then I looked at the federal program. And one key thing, he, as governor, when he was running for president, said, I asked him two questions. Is this a way of saving money? He said, no. If you really want to get people back to work, you have to do education. You have to supply child care.
That's correct.
You have to. Secondly, I said, it can't be a state program, can it? Because you'll have a meanness derby. He said, absolutely. It has to be a federal program, and it has to be subsidized. Well, right now, you know, we're living in a situation where we don't have effective programs for what is a really large at-risk population. And the good news here is that there's an even an embarrassment factor to attack this program. But the principles that you outline in your book really have much broader application. Mm-hmm. You know, and the arguments against this program are also used against a lot of all the other programs. I don't want to hijack your book.
Obviously, the debate over SNAP is at its core the same debate that we've had over almost every program for low-income people, the poor, is, because there's this sort of ethos that we have in our culture, at least in the abstract, that people should work. In fact, all of our programs have been based on the notion of work. And if you go back and look at almost all of our programs, if you earn income tax credit, for example, the largest anti-poverty program we have is based on work. You don't work, you don't get the income, you don't earn income, and don't get the tax credit. So we have this notion in the United States that everybody should be working. Now, this collides into other things like mom should be at home raising the kids. Well, what do we do about mom? We don't really know what to do with mom. So we think she should be working, but we want to take care of the kids, but we don't supply health care. We have this contradiction in our culture about the role, for example, of women and family. Other countries pay people to stay at home. The French will pay the mother to stay at home and raise the children. So, other countries deal with this also, but in the United States...
Or the father?
Or I think it's a family allowance. I'm not sure of if it's gender based or not, but I think there's a family allowance because the French wanted to incentivize having children, after two world wars, especially after World War I. So we in the United States we've got this sort of duality in our heads about especially about the role of women, but when it comes to poor people, the view is that they should be working. So, we're going to give a hand.
Let me qualify.
At least that's the view.
Time for a break, and we'll be back in a few minutes. We're back with Sheer Intelligence and our guest.
Indulge me here. You're basically giving away the main argument. The beneficiaries of these programs are people who can't work, not because they're inept, but because they're too young.
Everybody. Or they're disabled, or they're seniors.
Children. This is certainly true of child welfare. 70% were children. Your mother's not working, you're not going to eat. So let's cut to the chase here.
Yes, the majority of households are with kids.
Well, but the point
and
is...
In fact, the work requirements typically only relate to able-bodied men without kids. So there's a bit of a...
Right. Yeah. And the hypocrisy, by the way, to now stick it to these so-called conservatives, because it's hard to know what they're conserving, but they are all for people having families if they want them, and they're critical of the birth control movement for trying to keep that down. But once the child is born... I'm not the first person to observe this.
It's a Bonnie Frank line.
Not at all about the child. Yeah. The child was only important when it was a fetus and a political football, but once the child was born, and if they happen to be born to mothers who are not working for what reason, or fathers who are not working for what reason, the heck with them. That's really what I just want people to buy your book and read it because I want to discuss precisely because the immorality, the profound immorality of the argument, the attack on poor people, has to be made clear. And presumably every version of Jesus's thinking or the Hebraic tradition or Buddhism, there is no religion that I know of that does not emphasize the weak and helping the other and showing concern. Mm-hmm. So for all of what Chris Hedges talks about, our move to a kind of Christian fascism, which is scary and nationalistic and militarized. It's pretty hard to imagine somebody saying, no, I don't want that child to have that piece of bread or that butter or that milk. But that's really professionally, as a scholar, that's what you're up against, right? You must speak to groups. You must try to get this word out.
Well, I mean, I think that you run into, again, you run into this prejudice of, you know, we don't trust poor people because we think if they're poor, it's their own fault, you know. And, you know, and especially if they are not like us. And so I think there's this constant sort of cultural tension in the United States because we're, you know, because, again, you know, our view on poor people is that we should control them. We should monitor them. We should make it harder for, you know, and so we have a tendency to think poor people are poor because, you know, they somehow have failed morally or
but
in other ways.
But that's not the conservative, UTEC conservative. That's not really the conservative position when it comes to birth control.
Well, birth control is a separate issue. That's
of
course, yeah.
Okay, but as somebody who was born into poverty, let me tell you, I've thought about it quite often. My mother had, I think, 4 abortions before she had me, and my mother was not married when she had me. So I've always thought in this debate, at least when the Catholic Church says they're pro-life, they at least make some effort to take care of children who are born. The utter hypocrisy of saying you're against birth control, but you don't care about the child once it's born, strikes me personally. You know, what are we talking about here? Sure. I mean, so let's not avoid that. Your book is talking about taking food out of the mouth of babes, right?
It's also talking about why, in fact, that argument has failed. That's why SNAP has been so resilient. It's because at the end of the day, Americans don't want fellow Americans to go hungry. And so SNAP is about food. So whatever people's abstract notions of welfare or about the poor are, at the end of the day, they also don't want to see their fellow Americans be hungry. And so SNAP is, the reason why I defend the program is that it's effective at getting people to get food through the regular system of going to stores. Remember, SNAP is you take your EBT card, you go to Walmart, you go to your local, grocery store, you go to your local bodega if they're taking SNAP, and you could buy food like everybody else can. That's the genius of it. You don't look different. You're not having colored coupons anymore. And so it utilizes the existing system to enable people to get food. You know, that's, I think, a genius system.
Yeah, but we wouldn't need your book if that was obvious to everybody.
Well, that's why I wrote it. It's because I was fascinated by how this program has still survived all these years.
No, but also your book is a defense of the program, right. And it unfortunately needs a defense.
Right.
That's what I'm talking about, what's sick about our culture, our system. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's my point here, because the same defense, the programs are not all the same. But clearly, the program to aid to families with dependent children, you don't want dependent children to be lacking in education, health care, supervision, Head Start programs. If they're dependent children and their parents are not able to provide what is needed and they grow up without that being provided, there's a social cost, there's a damage, so forth. So, well, any kind of rudimentary common sense and decency would have you supporting these programs. And the irony, as I point out, with the pandemic, when suddenly a lot of us were vulnerable for one reason or another, particularly not having jobs, suddenly we wanted the government to throw money at us, certainly for health care, no questions. You get the vaccine, you go there, you get this checkup, an extra unemployment check. You'll get this. And there was Donald Trump leading the charge, right? I mean, the fact of the matter is Donald Trump played Roosevelt, FDR, during the pandemic.
Or at least did not get in the way. Yeah.
Huh?
Or at least did not get in the way of it. I mean, initiated some of this is always an interesting question.
Well, I think we misunderstand the Trump phenomena.
Oh, no, he's the populist dimension of him. Yeah, he didn't mind spending money.
Okay, but as on the receiving end, people got extra money.
Oh yeah,
to allow them to pay their rent or their mortgage,
sure.
And it saved them. That's what
right.
I'm trying to get at. It That's saved right. them. The programs work. They can be used not just to save banks. The New York Times, I mean, today, this morning, they have a story: the great educational success of the military education program. Oh. you have somebody in the army, they got in the military, they've got a regular salary. You're paying their teachers of their kids much more than the regular school system. They have none of the social disarray, crime, or anything else. They can live on a base, and oh, you get higher test results. And the people at the New York Times, I don't know, they lost all sense. This is a model for America. Oh, really? So we're going to all of us join the military, and then we'll get the grade scores up. It's nonsense. And I don't know, it's not for me to put some more outrage into your defense of your book and the program, but I think the significance of your book is that these programs that trace back to the New Deal and Roosevelt work. They worked splendidly. That includes regulating banks. That includes later on the Eisenhower building the highway program, worrying about infrastructure, all of this stuff, which every modern capitalist society in the world does. It's not just France. They do it to survive. They do it because it's efficient. That's the message of your book. The most important enduring program, which feeds people and keeps them alive and hopefully healthier so the medical costs are less for the society, that program is still under attack. But it's really a model for thinking about a more logical, not charitable, but more logical society, which some people refer to as social democracy or something, but it's really just common sense. It's what Confucius said a good emperor had to do. It's what Aristotle said a good emperor had to do. I mean, this is not some new modern rocket science.
No, not at all. And that was the point, I think, about the book, was that I sort of started out with a question about how has this program survived all those years, and then I came away going, you know, compared to the alternatives, this is a good program.
Yeah. So, really, why should people buy the book?
I think it would help them understand why we do it this way in the United States. Why do we have, we're the only country that bases our food assistance on this model. But it's also an income assistance program. At the end of the day, that's what SNAP is. And so, like a lot of our income assistance programs in the United States, that's indirect.
You say we're the only ones, but then you're suggesting the others have other ways and maybe better ways of doing it.
Well, the other countries, most other rich countries give, you know, they will provide straight cash through like some welfare system. Or nothing.
So for this congressman, what is his name, Gutch from in Florida, who wants to be the leader of the House, if he doesn't like this program, why doesn't he just give cash? Let people go whatever store they want.
Because we don't trust poor people. So it's a thin fiction, actually. But okay, obviously, when it comes to SNAP, at least they're spending it on food.
Okay, so why is our country, our capitalist class, dumber than the others? To say the Germans. No, really. Why?
I don't know that. Yeah.
But I mean, that's basically.
Well, I think that there's been a. If I can hazard a guess on this.
Is it primarily that we are a society built on racism? We identify poverty with race, and therefore we can be vindictive and vicious and illogical and punish children of the wrong race and not care about the consequence?
Well, actually, I think it might be, there are arguments about that. I would argue that, you know, once upon a time, post-war, you saw a model in the United States, unionized employers, unionized health. My father was an automobile worker at Chevrolet. And I grew up in a post-war America where you had large employers of unionized workforces. And so you had this government employee-employer relationship that was very similar to what happens in Germany. And that sort of stayed in place from the 40s through the 70s, and then it breaks down. And obviously with union busting and with, you know, and the loss of big job employment, you know, for a lot of industrial working class people. So by the 80s, that begins to break down. And then we come to celebrate the entrepreneurial, you know, robber baron types. When we're celebrating Elon Musk over, say, the chairman of General Motors, the chairwoman of General Motors, you know, that's a cultural phenomenon. But but there were the bones there of that relationships that we sort of lost. You see them maybe creeping back in some sectors.
Well, you know, show the book again, and look, people keep saying what works. what can we do that works? And this is the book. And I'm adding to it. I think this is a model for thinking about all of the so-called do-gooder programs that, unfortunately, most do-gooders have run away from or are indifferent to. Is shocking to me. As I said, somebody who grew up in the Depression, and my parents were, we never made it to the level of auto workers. They were garment workers, so sure. It was a bit rougher. But the idea, if somebody had told me when I was going to high school or something that we would be arguing about the food stamp program, and that would be questioned, I would think they'd all gone off their mind. Right. And by the way, just one last thought, because people keep saying, well, Trump is, a fascist and everything. Well, one of the appeals of fascism, everybody forgets. I know, because my father was from Germany and half my family were from Germany and the rest are still there. Unfortunately, the Jewish side of my family were killed by them. But the fascism worked in the most advanced, technologically advanced, enlightened, scientifically enlightened society because people didn't have jobs and they didn't have food. And you walked around, my uncle told me, my German uncle, with a wheelbarrow of marks and you couldn't buy a loaf of bread. And he was That's a farmer. Right. He couldn't sell his food and he had to bury it in the fields. And so when we look at Trump's appeal, an appeal of any demagogue of that sort, it's because That's people aren't happy. And the That's people right. who are unhappy and are going to Trump are unhappy economically, and most of them are white. Most That's of correct. Them are supposed to be privileged in this society, and they are hurting. Right. And while I appreciate that the New Republic gave your book a great plug, I think their whole idea that all of our problems start and end with Donald Trump, who is a symptom of societal disarray rather than its innovator, I think your book is an answer to that. Even this very good program, excellent program, I don't know how you possibly could criticize it, is being challenged. And while Trump, some of his people, I don't know where he comes down on this, are leading that charge, I don't hear much defense on the other side of the aisle.
And that was that's one of my points. Liberals should be, in fact, defending this program far more than they do sometimes.
Say that again.
Liberals should be defending this program far more than they do sometimes.
So why aren't they?
Well, it's because it's not cash. They like the idea of cash better because it's cleaner, gives people more freedom. But my argument is that, we're not going to do that in this country, except under rare circumstances like during the pandemic, when everybody was affected. Your point about this was that when have we been all in together? It's during crises, the Depression, the pandemic. Those are the rare moments in American history where universal programs like this tend to be supported because we're all in the same boat. But that's rare.
On that note, let me wrap. I really appreciate it. Could you show the book cover one more time?
One more time.
University of California Press.
Cover.
And unfortunately, the electronic version covers costs as much as that, so you can get the actual book.
$25.
Yeah, $25. And I want to thank you. And
Thank you.
Yeah. I want to thank Laura Kondarajian at KCRW and Christopher Ho for posting these shows on this great NPR station and others. I want to thank Joshua Shearer, our executive producer, who insisted I do this, and a great admirer of your work. I want to thank Max Jones, who does the video, Diego Ramos, who writes the introduction, and I particular shout out to the JKW Foundation, which in memory of Gene Stein, a great author who cared about these issues, supplies some funding for the show. See you next week with another edition of Sheer Intelligence.
Allumer le feu, mes chagrins, mes plaisirs, je n'ai plus besoin d'eux. balayer les amours avec leur trémolo, balayer pour toujours.